You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison and WORTFM.org, listener-sponsored community radio. The 8 o'clock buzz will be up next after the BBC News.
Do you care about workers and labor issues? Do you want to make a difference in our community for working people? Then join the Labor Radio team. Labor Radio is a weekly show that covers labor, social justice, and political issues that impact workers. And we need your help. As a Labor Radio volunteer, you will have the opportunity to report on important labor and social justice stories in your community, interview workers, activists, and experts, produce and edit your own stories. No prior experience is necessary, though a connection with labor is a plus. We will provide training and support. All you need is a passion for worker justice and a desire to amplify the voices of working people. To learn more, contact Volunteer Coordinator Adrian Rainey at 608-321-9583 or head online to WORTFM.org/volunteer to fill out an application. Labor Radio, a voice for workers.
Sue Montgomery. One of President Putin's top aides has downplayed a U.S. proposal for a 30-day ceasefire in the war in Ukraine. Yuri Ushakov said he told the U.S. National Security Advisor, Mike Waltz, that he felt the plan would only benefit Ukraine.
This proposed ceasefire is nothing other than a temporary respite for the Ukrainian military. Our goal is a long-term peace settlement, and we are looking forward to a peace settlement which takes into account our legitimate interests and our concerns. Nobody needs steps which imitate a peaceful path.
Yuri Ushakov speaking there. One of President Trump's envoys, Steve Witkoff, is in Moscow to discuss the ceasefire proposal, which Ukraine backs in principle. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has rejected a United Nations report which accuses the Israeli military of systematic sexual violence against Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank. Mr. Netanyahu called the allegations false and absurd. From Jerusalem, our Middle East correspondent Yolande Nell reports.
Benjamin Netanyahu responded angrily to this report, calling the Human Rights Council an anti-Semitic, rotten, terrorist-supporting and irrelevant body. Instead of focusing on war crimes committed by Hamas, he said, it was attacking Israel with false accusations. The UN investigators argue that the Gaza war has seen disproportionate violence against women and children, and that the apparent deliberate destruction of maternity wards could indicate a strategy to prevent births among a particular group, one of the legal definitions of genocide.
Taiwan's leader has announced a plan to reinstate a military court in order to deal with the rising number of soldiers who have been accused of spying for China. William Lai's proposal comes as Beijing is increasing strategic pressure on Taiwan. Celia Hatton explains.
Beijing believes the democratically ruled island of Taiwan is part of its territory, and it's pursuing its desire to one day claim Taiwan by ramping up so-called gray zone tactics, increased military pressure designed to exhaust Taiwan's reserves. There's also a fear in Taipei that Beijing has infiltrated Taiwan's military. 64 people faced prosecutions for spying in Taiwan last year, compared with just 10 in 2022.
Southern African leaders have decided to end their military mission in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, ordering a phased troop withdrawal. A regional summit has called for urgent efforts to end the conflict as troops begin pulling out. Meanwhile, Angola has announced that peace talks between the DRC government and Rwanda-backed M23 rebels will begin next week. World News from the BBC.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Bluestem Jazz, presenting Twin Talk at the North Street Cabaret on Friday, March 21st at 8 p.m. Chicago's Twin Talk, featuring saxophonist Dustin Lorenzi, bassist singer Katie Ernst, and drummer Andrew Green, create a style that is elastic, spontaneous, and open. More information and tickets are available at bluestemjazz.org.
Support for this program is provided by WORT's listener sponsors and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 2304. Local 2304 is a small local union with a big agenda, bringing power to the people by representing the workers who provide safe and reliable gas and electric service at MG&E. The professional union reps at Madison Teachers Incorporated and the staff collective right here at WORT. More information about the union is available on their website at ibew2304.com.
Good morning, it's 8:06 and you are tuned into WORT 89.9 FM, your listener-sponsored community radio station. My name is Tony Castaneda, and it's time for the Thursday, March 13th, 2025 edition of the 8 o'clock Buzz. Joining me live in the studio, all the way back from Orlando.
Alive in the studio
is number one, is my guy, Eli Wills. Eli, good morning. How's it going,
man? Morning, Tony. I'm doing good, man. I don't know if you've noticed, it's like 80 degrees outside.
Yes, it is. It's pretty nice out there.
Yeah, I think
we'll see how long that lasts. We'll talk about the weather in a little bit, but what I want to know is, why were you in Orlando last week?
Oh, you know, I've got this thing called a job.
Okay.
And they occasionally want me to go and try and hang out in Orlando and try to make money for that job. So I was down there for a big old tech conference.
Wow.
The Gartner Analytics Tech Conference.
You know, I don't even know what you do for your actual job. What are you? I mean, would we call you like a tech bro?
Yeah, I'm a tech.
Are you really?
I'm a tech bro. No, I mean, sort of. I don't know. I work for a tech company, so.
But what do you do?
So we have a piece of software that does analytics, and I help people when they buy our software. I help them get up and running with it. So when you buy our software, it's my job to make sure you know how to use it.
What does your software do? Do you even know?
It does. I would hope I know. You know, that's the whole gig. It's all analytics. So it's like if you have a database and you want to like get answers from your database, you can use our software to ask questions of it.
Really?
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Kind of like
stuff.
Wikipedia or something?
Yeah, it's kind of like Wikipedia, but for your own data. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good enough. You don't got to go any further.
That's about as interesting as it gets.
I know, man. I'm already bored to death.
Yeah.
We do have a show today, everyone. And first of all, though, we want to thank everybody who pledged your support over our little pledge drive, our winter pledge drive. The station, I guess we did it, man. The station met its goal. Me and Eli, who wasn't here, met our goal both days. And thank everyone who pledged your support, not only to our show, but to WRT, as we are celebrating our 50-year of 50 years of being in existence, just existing, Eli.
Yeah, for 50 years.
Yeah, you'll feel the same way when you eventually turn 50.
50 years.
It's a long time coming for you, man.
I know. And I'll ask for money the same way when I turn 50.
So. You're right. Maybe we can do a pledge drive for you, especially if you're still working here.
Yeah.
Working. Speaking of work, I've been kind of lax on your payment lately.
Well, I think that's well-deserved because I don't want to take it personally, but it sounds like y'all raised money, more money without me than with me. So.
Yeah, don't worry. We still need you here. First of all, here's your carrot cake.
Healthy.
And.
Oh, we got healthy.
Yes, and here is your banana.
Oh, man, we haven't had a ripe banana in a long time.
In
a long time.
You've got to thank the co-op for that. It's a little banana, but, you know, it's ripe. It's yellow. That works.
And it's fair trade.
Before I go any further, here's your newspaper.
Oh, that's my other thing.
As you can see, our city clerk was put on paid leave. And maybe it was deserved. I mean, she lost 200 votes.
I'll read up on it. I'll let you know. I guess, yeah, I feel like you lose 200 votes.
They eventually found her, but it took her a whole month to fess up, and by that time it was too late.
Yeah.
Actually, what I had understood is they actually did discover them soon enough that they could have been whatever, but I guess she said, nah, forget it, man. The world's going to end anyhow. It wasn't going to matter.
Yeah.
Yes, so on today's show, we're going to be speaking with, we're going to do our Palestinian update, our Gaza update, our monthly update with our good friend Jennifer Lowenstein. And Eli, check this out. We actually have an actual comedian, man. Actually somebody who gets paid.
You're going to get a
living, makes a living. I mean, no, I'm not belittling you or Sasha or any of the other paid volunteers or unpaid volunteers at the station, but Jeff Maurer just came across his name the other day. We contacted him, and I guess he's hired up for publicity, but he's going to be on our show this morning.
Yeah.
He's a former writer for last week tonight,
the John Oliver show,
amongst other things, and Eli, I told him I'm gonna ask him for some tips on how you
can be funnier.
Yes, and quit your job, which nobody knows what you do still.
Yeah.
Hey. And then you don't have to go to Orlando except for to just appear as a comedian.
Yeah.
On these shows, so.
Well, hopefully.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that. It was pretty interesting checking out his stuff, and yeah.
Hopefully he's got some answers for me.
I hope he's got answers for all of us.
Yeah.
So, he's going to be on. I don't know. What do you got?
I don't know. How'd your basketball team do this week, Tony?
Oh, it was our last game last night. And
oh yeah,
took it on the chin, man.
Oh no,
took it on the chin, but not too bad. It was a good game. Whatever.
Good,
but
good to ramp us
That's
up
all right.
For,
this wasn't our year.
Yeah. Hey.
It's all right. We can't win them all, as they say. Well, anyhow, that's it. You got anything else to add?
Yeah. The views and opinions expressed on the Thursday 8 o'clock buzz do not necessarily represent the opinions of the Wart paid staff, board of directors, or our millions of volunteers. The Thursday 8 o'clock buzz is for entertainment purposes only.
And,
So there.
There. All right. There you have it, everybody. In a minute, we're going to get to Jennifer Lowenstein. Stay tuned, and thank you very much for tuning into WRT. Is there something else I forgot? Yes. Here's the thing, is that if for some reason you did not know that we have been a pledge driving for the last 2 weeks, I don't know how that could have happened, but maybe you were gone or something. Maybe you were in a coma or something. You know, you got in a car accident or something, and you didn't know that was happening, and you feel so bad that you were not able to pledge your support to WART. The person or persons who were giving us a matching grant have agreed to go another week with that. So if you want to go online to WRTFM.org press the pledge button, you could still give us money, and that would be really cool. And maybe we'll even check it and see how much money we got coming in from you for this show. So if you want to do that, again, go online to WRTFM.org and add some more money, because you forgot. I know, you just forgot all about it. And here's your chance, all right? So that's all I got, man. Let's go to some music, and in a minute, Jennifer Lowenstein. Smoke a mile, that's one. Sheriff's inquiry, something for you. All right. Well, the Pogues, and yes, I did catch that, I hope. I did not know about that. It's 8:14, and you are tuned into WRT. Do your 8:14 thing this morning. Joining me on the line, I'm very pleased to have, again, our good friend and our Middle East, what shall I say? I guess I'm going to call you an expert, Jennifer.
Just say correspondent or whatever, reporter, whatever.
Reporter. Well, there's been a lot going on. Of course, we'll get to the whole issue of Mahmoud Khalil in a minute. But let's just give us the general update. What is going on vis-a-vis the Trump administration and the situation in the occupied territories?
Well, I guess what I would say is we are kind of in stasis at the moment. You know, there are talks being held in Doha, and the Israelis finally showed up for them. But what's happening is that the Israelis, with Witkoff, are trying to extend phase one of the ceasefire so that they can get as many of the hostages back as possible. And my feeling is that it's somewhat duplicitous to do that, because really what Netanyahu would like is for all the hostages to be back, so there's no more leverage on the part of Hamas, and then to resume the war. And there are also talks apparently being held on phase two of the ceasefire. So there's two things going on at once. Some people wanting to extend the first, and others starting to negotiate the second. It's very unlikely that we'll ever reach phase two of the ceasefire at this point, because there's so much pressure within Netanyahu's government to resume the war. The question I have is that what's left to bomb in Gaza, you know? And for people listening, right now the situation in Gaza is getting worse by the day, because now I believe 9 days ago Israel cut off all humanitarian aid, and then 2 or 3 days ago cut off all electricity as well. And if you read reports, we're hearing that approximately 3 people a day have been killed since the ceasefire went into effect, which is, you know, very contradictory. In other words, Israel is the ceasefire is being violated on a daily basis by the Israelis, not by Hamas, and that's been the case pretty much all along. And yet Israel has gone ahead and it's maintaining a very low level, sort of a simmering conflict. Well, conflict is the wrong word. It's an assault on the people of Gaza. It's the continuation of slow genocide.
Right. Well, we are hearing that that there is bombing going on at certain checkpoints, and that civilians are dying again in Gaza. Not to mention, some people are focused on Gaza, continued expansion and a conflict in the West Bank.
Well, and I think that's something we have to be really, you know, watching right now, because, of course, what's happening in the West Bank is atrocious. I mean, you've got 40,000 people displaced, and the defense minister of Israel, Israel Katz, basically saying they're not allowed to come back home. And the Israeli army has taken up positions in at least 4 refugee camps in the northern West Bank. And basically they're saying they're not going to leave, or they're going to be there for at least a year. I mean, we're talking about the reoccupation of the occupied West Bank, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I feel like we have some, you know, I think things are getting very bad.
Well, Secretary, not to mention Secretary of State Marco Rubio, released, sent $4 billion in more military aid to Israel, including the 200-ton bombs that just destroy whole neighborhoods, if need be, and when used. So what about that?
Yeah, well, Rubio is, I think, more dangerous than we want to believe. It's been more than, it was $3 billion was released in funding military aid about a week ago, and then 3 days later, an additional $4 billion. So, and that's been sort of obscured in the news, but it's actually been closer to around $7 billion. And among the things that the United States is sending are bunker-busting bombs, mm-hmm. Which you certainly don't need in the Gaza Strip. As I said, there's literally very little left to bomb. Bunker busters, I should add, just as an aside, are what is needed if Israel is going to bomb Iran's nuclear facilities. I don't see that happening in the next day or so or anything like that. But the fact is, that's the kind of bombs that they're getting, and that's something that the Israelis have wanted to do for a long time. So, yeah, and the West Bank, I mean, you know, this is a continuation of the war, and I expect to hear in another few weeks that Trump is going to allow Netanyahu to annex at least three quarters of what's left of the West Bank, if not the whole thing.
What gives you that impression?
Well, when Trump was peddling his quixotic Trump Gaza resort, he made a statement to the press that they would be hearing about the West Bank in another month, mm-hmm. and. My guess is that since Netanyahu and many others have wanted the outright annexation of the West Bank for a long time, and Congress, of course, in this country isn't helping with people, I think it was Speaker Johnson, raising a motion that the West Bank now be only referred to as Judea and Samaria, and this is in the House of Congress, right? I mean, we really are off the charts.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, that's what I expect.
Okay. It's 8:22, and you are tuned into the Thursday Buzz here on WORT Radio. I'm speaking with our Middle East correspondent, I guess, Jennifer Lowenstein, a former lecturer at Penn State, and also here at the UW-Madison in Middle Eastern Studies. Let's bring it home now. The big news around here was the arrest, I guess, or detainment of Mahmoud Khalil, who is of a Palestinian origin, and he was one of the leaders or one of the spokespersons for the protest at Columbia University. While I say arrest, it's because he has not committed any crime. So he has been picked up by ICE. Initially, they tried to revoke his student visa, but they're so stupid. It just drives me crazy because he's no longer a student. He has graduated. He's a legal resident with a green card. He has an American-born wife, who was expecting a child, you know, anytime soon. And here's Donald Trump saying, well, this is, there's going to be many more of these arrests. Can we talk about the case of Mahmoud Khalil?
Yeah, I mean, it should be chilling everyone and anyone who is watching it. And of course, more people should know about it. But as you said, this is a person who was high profile on Columbia University's campus in the last year and a half, since October 7th, especially. He has committed no crime whatsoever, and he is a U.S. green card holder, which means he's entitled to all of the same rights as American citizens. And yet he was arrested, detained for a short time, disappeared because they wouldn't tell, the ICE officials wouldn't tell his wife where he was. He's now down in Louisiana. And I believe that there was a ruling yesterday that he would not be allowed back to New York for his hearing, but would have to have it down in Louisiana, which, of course, is not good news. It's chilling. My feeling is that if he's blocked from being deported, we still have something to worry about, because our First Amendment is being challenged very openly. If he is deported, everybody in this country should be out in the streets protesting, because this is it, you know? We don't have free speech. We don't have anything in this country.
And some people are saying it's a very slippery slope and could lead to other deportations of,
oh, absolutely,
of legal citizens.
Right. If you can go around deporting, it's called capture and revoke, right? Capturing pro-Palestinian protesters and revoking their visas and deport them. You know, the next step is for American citizens to be targeted. We already are. I mean, there have been multiple reports recently about how the State Department is using AI and other means to set up dossiers on anyone and everyone who is out there publicly protesting or speaking out or writing. I mean, this is extremely chilling. But one thing that I want to point out is that this isn't Trump administration, you know, suddenly starting a new phase in American history. These actions have roots in the Patriot Act, in extraordinary rendition, in black site prisons, in warrantless wiretapping. I mean, the stuff that's been building throughout the 20th century, especially, you know, I mean, the ICE surveillance of American citizens, allowing enhanced interrogation or torture techniques, disappearing people who aren't American citizens. I mean, we have a long line now of acts and actions that have been anti-free speech that have been in the making for a lot more than the last, you know, since October, since the elections.
Mm-hmm. Now, here we come with little Marco Rubio again, who has used a law that was implemented in 1952 to detain Mahmoud Khalil. There have been demonstrations nationwide, and they're ongoing. What can I say? And where do you think, you just kind of mentioned where you think this is all going? But how does this tie into the United States relationship with the Netanyahu government?
Well, I mean, there's part of me that it's very obvious that the relationship between the United States and Israel is a very thick and symbiotic one, in which Israel has been, for the last, you know, 8 decades, pretty much allowed to do whatever it wants with absolute impunity. The United States government is definitely to blame for that in large part, especially since 1967. It's a pretty horrible record that we have. Now, what were you just asking?
Well, I'm just kind of like, first of all, what about the Jewish diaspora in terms of their response to Mahmoud Khalil's detention here? A lot of people in the Jewish diaspora are speaking out strongly against it. But then again, you got people like the ADL who are kind of like, well, I don't know. Let's just step back and see.
Oh, the ADL was outright supportive. I mean, the statement they issued was absolutely repugnant. But what's interesting is that the Jewish diaspora, of course, is not united, and there are a lot of people who are very upset and angry at what Israel's been doing and what the United States has allowed Israel to be doing. But then you have the likes of Donald Trump himself and Steve Bannon and a few others who are saying that non-Zionist or anti-Zionist Jews are Israel's biggest enemy. And, you know, we people in Jewish Voice for Peace, for example, we're portrayed as absolute lunatics by the Jewish Federation, by AIPAC, and by the ADL.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is, again, people, all right, how do you rationalize targeting even Jewish Palestinian protesters, you know, Jewish Palestinian rights protesters?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you target the ones that are anti-Zionist.
Okay, and this is a question that, yeah, I know this is a very heavy subject that we're talking about now, and this is a question that I was going to ask our comedian, a guest who's going to be on later on in the show, but I guess I'll ask you this too. Here we have Elon Musk, two Heil Hitler salutes at the inauguration. Donald Trump gave one during the campaign. Back in 2016, after Trump got in Charlottesville, you had a bunch of Trump supporters marching with torches saying, "Jews will not replace us." Trump is basing a lot of these actions, and Rubio and his people, on the whole issue of people cannot express anti-Semitic statements or feelings, and that's
according
why. And that means all of us. That means all of us. But here we have actual Nazis. It appears to be right in Trump's cabinet. I mean, what about that contradiction there?
Well, that's not a whole lot different than than some of the Christian Zionists. In other words, yeah, if you look into the white nationalist and neo-Nazi movements, what you'll find is people saying, we have nothing against the Jews, but they belong back in Israel. You know, and that's, it's kind of a, okay, and that's not by any means the only view, but many people will say, okay, well, it's like the Mexicans in America, where they need to go back to Mexico. Well, the Jews in America, they need to go back to Israel. I mean, and that's a good thing. So mm-hmm. they become Israel supporters.
Right. Well,
and,
we're going to wind down a little bit here. What should we expect to see within the next couple weeks with the situation? What should we be looking out for?
Well, it depends to some extent on how fast or slow these negotiations happen. If it could be drawn out for weeks while this low-grade war on Gaza continues, war on Gaza and on the West Bank. And I think people should be paying attention to Israel's actions in southern Lebanon and southern Syria right now, too, because that's all part of this power grab.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this has been, is a huge power grab on the part of Israel, which has been countered to some extent by Turkey. But we should be watching Syria for sure and Lebanon. But in the West Bank and Gaza, I don't see anything positive coming, and I hope that I am wrong.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Jennifer, I want to thank you very much again for appearing with us. And I know with the daylight saving times change, that now you are like 2 hours behind
earlier.
Us or something, at least. But thank you for getting up, and I hope you can maybe go back to sleep, but I doubt it. You're awake now. All right.
Time to get up.
Thank you very much, and we'll be in touch soon.
Thanks a lot.
All right.
Have a good rest of your day. Bye-bye.
It's 8:33. You are tuned into Thursday Buzz on WRT Radio 89.9 FM. Did anybody pledge any support? I don't know. We haven't looked, but we will check it out. In a minute, we're going to be speaking with a comic and a writer, Jeff Maurer. That's all I got. What do you got, Eli?
Not much. I'll look up the pledging right now.
All right.
Pulling
good
it up,
good job.
So we'll have
give a call out there to Jeff. Thank That's you very right. much, everybody. Stay tuned. Here's some LKJ. You know what I'm saying?
I was walking down the road. The other day when I hear a little youth man say, him say, you know see me situation, me don't have no accommodation, me have to sign on at the station at 6 in the evening. Me say me life got no meaning, I just living without feeling. Still, me have to make a race, cause me come of age and me want to go real. I was walking down the road another day when I hear another youth man say, him say, me nah walk for no pittance, me nah draw them assistance. Me used to run a little racket, but what? The police them did stop it, and the hard was to happen. Still, me have to make a race, cause me come off age and me want to go real. I was walking down the road yet another day when I hear another youth man say, him say, me have to pick a pocket, take a wallet from my jacket, me have to do it real crabbit, and if I lock it, me have to pop it, and if I safe, me have to crack it, I'll chop it with me hatchet. But me have to make a race, cause me come off age and me want to go race.
It's 8:36. You are tuned into the Thursday 8 o'clock buzz here on WORT Radio. Joining me on the line, I'm very pleased to have, a famous guy, which, Jeffrey, we don't have too many real...
You're really stretching the limits of the word famous there.
Well, first of all, I got to say, your guy, Sam,
My media guy.
Yeah, I got a note yesterday, and of course, me and Eli here, we're such professionals here at Listener Sponsored Community Radio that our show wasn't completely filled up, and we saw, okay, hey, we'll get this guy. Does Sam know Charlie, our news director, or something? Does he have some sort of Madison connection?
I have no idea, but okay. I'm glad to know that I was preferable to dead air.
Yes.
That's that binary choice.
We'll see.
You narrowly decided to have me on.
Like I mentioned, you are a comedian, and you but you're also a writer, and you've been writing for the John Oliver show for a while here. And you know, I don't know where to start, but I did look up your stuff, and I was like, man, this guy's for real. Checked out several things, and I don't know if you were able to listen to our last segment. I don't know if you were, but it was a more of a serious segment talking about the just an update on the Middle East. But we also talked about Mahmoud Khalil, and I noticed on your site that you had actually, you're on top of that stuff too, and you had actually put in your own two cents on the detainment of Mahmoud Khalil as it pertains to First Amendment rights and being able to speak out. Do you care to kind of give your take on the whole detention of Mahmoud Khalil to start off?
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to. My piece yesterday on my blog, which is imightbewrong.org, which is what I do these days. You're right. I used to write for John Oliver, but for the last few years, I've been writing this blog at imightbewrong.org. Yeah, yesterday... my piece was about Mahmoud Khalil, and lucky for me, I'm kind of on record in two important ways in this case. The first is that I'm a big free speech guy, so I've been writing pro-free speech stuff, even as it hasn't been super popular on the left to be writing that stuff. in the last few years, even though I'm a Democrat and Obama liberal, but I've still been writing the free speech stuff for a while. So I'm on record there. And I'm also on record that a lot of what these protesters, especially the ones at Columbia, have done really rubbed me the wrong way. I don't want to paint all the protesters with a broad brush, but a lot of this stuff was real bad, you know, restricting people's movement, and there were a lot of anti-Semitic chants. Mm-hmm. So I got a lot of columns on my blog basically calling these people. I don't know how much I can swear.
No, wait. I was just going to interrupt you. You cannot say that word. And, yeah. And the other six words, too.
Just think of the Carlin speech, the things you can't say on television. Same here.
Yeah. And if it was 10 p.m. at night, I guess you can say those things. But I think you could say
HBO ruined me. HBO ruined me because I could say anything on HBO. But that should really be the first question whenever I do any radio or podcast. What are the outer limits of how much I can swear? Because I promise you, I will touch those outer limits. But let's just say I said some of the protesters, again, I don't want to paint with a broad brush, or not all of them, but some of them are real jerks. So I'm on record. I'm pro-free speech. I think some of the protesters are jerks. I got to say, Khalil's group put out some statements that I think are real bad. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, though I'm not a fan of this guy, of course he shouldn't be detained. He didn't break the law. The Trump administration isn't saying that he committed a crime. They've got this pretext, which there might be a very narrow legal basis for his detention, but even if there's a narrow legal basis for it, that doesn't mean it's a good thing. It's clearly an anti-speech move. You can tell that from the things that Trump administration officials and Trump himself have said. They're detaining him because of his beliefs. And I know he's a green card holder, but not a citizen, but even so, that's just a clear anti-speech move, and it's bad stuff, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know, but my producer, Eli Wills, he's a budding comedian. He's been at it for 3 years or so. And
I heard, yeah.
And so some of these questions are kind of going to be directed towards kind of assisting him and helping him out in his journey as a comedian. Sure. You don't mind if they lead. And he may even have some questions of his own. I'm sure he does. Because I've been trying to get him, you know, he does have a real job, like you did for a long time. And one of your jobs, I was surprised to know, is that you were a speechwriter for the Environmental Protection Agency for, what, nine years
almost,
or so?
Almost 9 years, yeah.
And
yeah.
But as you were doing that, is that also when you started to delve into being a comedian and taking part in some of these open mics and stuff?
Yeah, exactly. It was when I was in my mid-20s, I got hired at EPA, and that was also when I started doing stand-up at night. So, yeah, that's those two things were concurrent. And after about 9 years of that, I got hired by the John Oliver Show. So,
and then
there you go, Eli. If you want to be on a rocket ship to the comedy middle class, I can tell you how I did it, and maybe you can follow my path.
I wouldn't have expected the EPA to be that jumping board that it was, but you know, we'll take it.
Who would? You know, I always get these cold emails from people in D.C., especially back when I was still writing for John. They would say, hey, I heard you were a speechwriter and then became a comedian. I'm a speechwriter and want to become a comedian. And I always had to tell them, no, that's not like a normal path.
Yeah.
As far as I know, I'm the only person who ever did that.
Well, it probably helps if you're funny also. Now, I was going to ask you how that tied into it. Now, and that's what I like in Eli. It took him a while to get there. All right. So the however many years, the 7 years. You've been a comedian now for 3 years, though, Eli, right?
That's
three,
about right.
About right. Three. Yeah. So you got four more years, man. He's got four more years to get it together here. And another thing that I actually was checking out your the Andrew Yang podcast, first of all, and that you did. That was a couple of years ago, I believe. And first of all, I'm like, man, how come that name, Andrew Yang, rings a bell? And then I was like, oh, that's that dude that ran for president, and he also was a guaranteed income guy that was going to give us $1,000 a month or a day or something like that. And
yeah,
it doesn't sound so bad.
Oh, I wish it had been a day. I know. Think he would have won if it had been a day.
Did he pay you $1,000 to be on his podcast?
I was getting paid $1,000 a second. Okay. You may have noticed I was speaking really slowly while I was there.
So I guess let's talk a little bit about the current Trump administration. I mean, and the EPA was just in the news the other day by abolishing about 50% of the EPA rules that we've had, throughout. It's almost funny in itself. It's like, but which agency is more absurd, stupid? Agency head right now. We can go after all of them, man. I mean, education, they want to get rid of the Department of Education, all the watchdogs and the independent inspector generals, all that. Where do you start talking when you're commenting now on the current administration?
That is a good question because, I don't think anyone knows the answer. The weird thing about the Trump administration is that there are always so many things going on that it is literally impossible. Even if you're a person who really keeps up on the news, or if, like me, it's your job to write about this stuff, it's easy to forget, like, really important things that would be major scandals in any other administration. You just mentioned Andrew Yang in the New York mayoral race. Just then I remembered, oh, yeah, there's that whole Eric Adams thing where he dropped the case and all the people. I had forgotten about that. That would be Watergate in any other administration. So it's always tough to figure out where to start. I have decided on my blog I can't try to chronicle everything the Trump administration is doing. Because first of all, I'm a comedian, so I have a good excuse as to why it's not my job to make note of every terrible thing that happened. You know, let the New York Times do that. That's not what I'm doing. But I still struggle to not just do Trump every day. I don't want to do Trump every day. I think that's boring. And it turns into the same column over and over and over because you just end up going, well, that shouldn't be. Well, and then also this shouldn't be. And this thing is bad as well. So I try to, like, today I wrote about severance. I really like severance. So my column today is about severance. It just can't be Trump every day. I don't know. I don't know how to square this circle. How do you cover everything that's happening without losing your mind?
Right. Now, another thing that, you know, when I go watch Eli, because Eli has turned me on to the comic community here in Madison. In Madison, Wisconsin, I don't know if you know, if you've ever been here, but actually Madison has got a pretty robust comedian scene here. Our comedy on State Street is a big club that a lot of national touring acts. I'm surprised you haven't been here yet. Maybe
I haven't. I haven't. That's largely because I didn't tour much because I was a guy who always had a day job when I was a stand-up.
Right.
I'm sure Madison does have a really good scene because I'll tell you, college towns tend to punch above their weight comedy-wise.
Mm-hmm. But one of the things I've noticed is that, I grew up, I'm pretty old, and I grew up during the time of Dick Gregory and George Carlin. And believe it or not, I Bill Cosby... before
I believe it, you know that he was a comedian before he had this other career that he's better known for these
yes,
days.
Yes, yes. Watch him on the Ed Sullivan show and the Johnny Carson show, which I'm teaching Eli about these things that used to happen, these old institutions, if you will. Mm-hmm. And their shtick was politics. Their shtick was that, and then I kind of like what you said in that podcast with Mr. Yang, if you will, about, as a stand-up comedian and part of your routine, you don't come out there and say, I'm going to talk about politics because, like, everybody's like, boo, I don't want to hear about it.
But, yeah.
But as
I do like to wait a little farther into my set before the boos, if possible.
Right. Okay. But as a writer, though, that most of the writers kind of do lean towards the left. those have got time to really write things down. And then if you look at John Oliver, and if you look at Seth Meyers, and everybody else, all the late night guys, they're very political. And they go after Trump with a vengeance. And, well, not just Trump, but other politicians. But it's so easy now. But they're extremely political. So can you talk a little bit about the difference between being a stand-up comedian talking about politics and a writer?
Yeah, well, you're right. When I was a stand-up, I didn't do much political material, which people often find funny because they know that, it's my area of interest. It's where I've worked. And it's the thing I write about now. So they're like, what, your act wasn't political at all? No, not really, because it is a problem if you start talking about politics. First of all, half the audience doesn't care about politics at all, so they just tune you out. The half that's still paying attention, half of them disagree with you. So suddenly you're playing to a quarter of the audience when you're a stand-up and you bring up politics. So I would rarely do it. Very little politics in my stand-up act. But on a TV show or in a Substack newsletter like I write now, you're at least telling people in advance what it's going to be, right? Like when I turn on Colbert these days, I know that it's going to be politics. And moreover, I know the perspective that it's going to come from. So at least you're signaling in advance, fair warning, this is what it is. If you're not into that, this is probably not the show for you. It is weird what's happened to TV, though, because you're right. During the Johnny Carson era, nobody was political. You never knew Johnny Carson's political views. Mm-mm. These days, the only late night show that's not political is probably Fallon, and I don't totally know why that's happened. I did write a column a while back called Comedians Talk About Politics Because Commentary Is Easy and Jokes Are Hard. And I do think that's true. One thing that's hard is coming up with jokes is really difficult. But if you want me to just slam Trump, oh, I can do that all day and all night. So I think that's part of what happened. But it is weird that so much political content has crowded out the non-political stuff. And even I, a person who's interested in this stuff and follows it, sometimes mourns the loss of the more apolitical content.
Hmm. All right. I allow Eli to ask a couple questions on a show if he's so inclined.
Thanks, Tony.
But you're supposed to reply, Jeff, that's a great question.
It cheapens it when you ask. Absolutely. For it, Tony, of course.
Well, I mean, we keep track of these things. All right,
I'll sell it. You'll believe it when I say it.
Eli, you got a question?
I do have a question. I think we've kind of touched on it a little bit, but you said you were a writer early on for the John Oliver show. I don't know exactly how long your tenure was. Were you, because I know John Oliver started during the Obama administration, were you there long enough to see the changings of the administrations and kind of how the show, I guess, kind of changed its approach with the election of Trump? Because I think we're kind of touching on an interesting point of politics and comedy and kind of how all-encompassing the topic of Trump kind of took over that comedy world for a while. And I'm really just kind of interested on your perspective on how a show like John Oliver, took that changing of the administration, and then kind of how, comedy writing and political writing in general has changed with kind of this black hole of Trump content that's come since his first election.
Yeah. God, Eli, that is a great question. I need to sit down for a minute. I am so bowled over by what. Oh my God! Did you prep that in advance? It's like you are speaking right into the deepest core of my brain that I'm so excited to answer.
Man, I believe it. I believe it.
It really was. It was outstanding.
Thank you.
So I was part of the original writing staff. I was one of the first eight hired. We were eight for a long time, our writing staff. So that was 2014. So yes, that was the Obama administration. And there was a sea change in comedy writing when Trump came in. Things were so different. It happened at a good time for us. So we started in 2014.
We had something happen with your audio real quick, Jeff. I don't know if something...
What is this show? How are we different from The Daily Show? We sort of answered that question with, okay, we do the long form stuff, deep dives, because we don't have ads, so we can do a 20-minute segment on something.
But that's the first 2 years, and then we're like, okay, now what? How do we find another gear? And right then, Trump came on the scene. So that was good for us because it gave us a new thing to talk about. And it fueled the show for a while, but comedy writing is, in my opinion, in an awfully strange place now because that reaction to the weirdness of Trump and how he is unlike anyone who's been on the scene in American politics in any of our memories, you know, that gets old after a while. It was, exciting, is that maybe the right word, in 2016? But that's 9 years ago now, and I can speak for myself. I'm tired of pointing out how weirdo he is. So that's the challenge these days, is to, like I said, just not write all Trump all the time and have it get boring and repetitive. And how many times can you say, that's a bad idea, that's a bad idea? It is kind of different this time around, because it seems like the pretty clear difference between the first Trump administration and the second Trump administration is that in the first one, you actually had people who were able to restrain him and keep him from doing some of the weirder things that he wanted to do. This time around, he seems to be doing just whatever he wants. It seems like at this point, the only check on his power is the courts. We will see what the courts will do. They've ruled against him once. We'll see if that's the first of many or what. So, you know, I'm just a guy who writes a blog these days. I'm not in the world of writing a TV show every night. I think they've got their work cut out for them, and I don't know if it feels exhilarating for them or exhausting in that they're writing the same thing over and over. Like I said, my feeling is I can't write the same column every day, so I try to mix it up. On a TV show, I don't know. You build these audiences. You know, an MSNBC show is happy to talk about Trump every night, so maybe a late-night comedy show is as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
We're speaking with Jeff Maurer, everybody. You are listening to Thursday Buzz. Jeff, can you talk a little bit about your Substack and just tell us where in your blog or whatever and tell people where they can find more of your stuff? But Jeff is a real comedian and a speechwriter. He's worked with John Oliver, amongst other people. So if you could just tell us where people can listen to you and find you.
Sure. It's imightbewrong.org. That's my, I like to say blog. I like the old school word. A lot of people say newsletter. I think that sounds more official, but blog. Yeah. It's a Substack newsletter. It's just a blog with a payment system attached, which by the way, you don't have to use, cause half my stuff is
half the stuff is not. Mm-hmm. So if you just want to show up and read it and not, or decide if you want to pay later,
that you'll get half the stuff. But that's imightbewrong.org, and it's a blog and a podcast. I publish 4 written pieces and 2 podcasts a week, and it's good. It's great not having anyone who can edit me. All my career, when I was a speechwriter, when I was writing for John Oliver, there was always somebody above me who'd, you know, take some stuff, leave other stuff, and always the stuff they leave out makes you go, I wish you'd taken that. Now I can just write it and no one edits me, which is kind of cool.
Right. Okay. Jeff, unfortunately, my show ends in about 2 minutes or so. So I did have a lot more questions. But one of the things, though, that you actually put on your thing, or that Sam, your publicity guy, publisher, whatever.
Publicist.
It mentioned that we could ask you about is, like, what should be the Democratic talking points? Right now, they're just kind of, I don't know. It's like they're like a deer in a headlight. It feels they're not. A lot of people feel they're not standing up. They're not doing what they should do. What are the Democratic talking points? What should they be?
Well, if Trump crashes the economy, and it looks like he's well on his way to doing that, I think the message is we won't do that. We will be better and smarter and just not lean on the crash the economy button, as he's been doing. It is, I got to say, people say, the Democrats don't stand up. They don't have the votes. They don't have the votes. If you want to help Democrats, quote unquote, stand up, whatever that means, well, then they need to win the next election. Because right now, all of them voted against the budget. It still passed because they don't have the votes.
All right. Well, Jeff, I want to thank you very much for being on the show, and hopefully we'll develop some sort of a cool relationship and see you when you come to Madison. I'm going to send Eli your way. That was actually, I got to agree with you, that was a very well thought out question from Eli. Eli, you get an A on that.
Unbelievable.
One.
Can't believe
it. Best question I've ever had, Eli.
Thank you. I'm honored. I can't believe it. What an accolade.
All right. Jeff, thank you very much for being on our very humble little radio station here in Madison, Wisconsin. And come on by and visit sometime. Me and Eli will show you around.
Heck yeah.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Wow. That was pretty cool.
Heck yeah.
Jeff Maurer. Also want to thank Jennifer Lowenstein for being on today's show. We want to thank everybody for listening. How are we doing on the pledge? Do we
I got
get
one
any?
Pledge. I got a shout
gotta
out.
Thank, is there
thank you, thank you, Julie Fuller.
Julie, thank you
got
so
her name
much.
On there, yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for pledging your support to WRT. You can continue to do it if you want online. Stay tuned for Jeff Spitzer-Resnick with Hajira. He's back. Eli's back. And Mary Lou on the phones, Peggy and Mike Cullen putting us on the internet, and Charlie Pittman for being our news director. It's 9 o'clock, everyone. This is WRT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin.
Good show, Tony.
Thank you. And now the long pause before the insurgent radio kiosk. I pressed it. Go.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk.
About time.
Thursday, March 13th.
Jesus. Who's playing that drum?
This is Bird Note. Identifying birds by ear means getting familiar with each species' unique voice. And that means learning the other voices in the ecosystem, too. Like the fox squirrel's barks. This squirrel's alarm barks could at first sound like the calls of a red-bellied woodpecker. But with enough practice, you can hear how the squirrel's barks are more throaty and more frequent than the woodpecker. Here's the squirrel again. And the woodpecker. That's not the only voice that could trip you up in the forest. Take a listen to this cute little trill.